This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
It's a marshmallow world in the winter when the snow comes to cover the ground.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, ring-a-ding-ding. It's time to ring in the holiday season, and there's no better guy I can think of than James DeMare, who is going to be our guest here today. But before we get into that, I just thought I would mention a couple little things about what we were doing. We just posted a podcast this last week with Murray Sawchuk, who talked about things that were happening in Las Vegas. And this week, I am going to be featuring a conversation with another Las Vegas resident, James DeMare, who has been working over at the Thunderbird Hotel and Casino, and when we were recording this conversation, he was still there and has since now just recently moved over to the Mint. So I would recommend if you're going to be going out to Las Vegas that you check that out. It's a very good show. He's not doing his bird act. He's doing a talking act, and it's very entertaining, very funny, and a lot of fun, and very intimate. It's a small room that you will enjoy along with the martinis. This recording was made at Frankie's Tiki Room in Las Vegas, and so there's a little bit of ambient noise in the background, but it does not deter from the enjoyment, and it complements this very well. And we had a very good time having some martinis and cigars and great conversation, and it went on just a little bit longer than our typical podcast does, so I don't want to take too much room on the front end of this. So please welcome my guest this week, Mr. James DeMare, here on The Magic Word.
Well, it's a time for play. It's a whipped cream day. I wait for it the whole year round.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com, and we are here at Frank's Tiki Bar in Las Vegas, Nevada.
And you haven't even drank yet. What the hell? Yes, we're drinking at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
That's right. We're 5 o'clock in some place.
Aren't we recording a podcast while you're actually, one is playing right now, isn't it, online?
That's right, yeah. That is true. I've never been to a tiki bar. Oh, by the way, I'm here with James DeMare. Hey, James.
Hey, how are you?
Fantastic, thank you very much. I'm better now that we're here with a martini and a cigar and
good
friends.
The real martini's the magic.
You know, I have to say, talk about that, martinis and magic. My brand is Magic of Martinis. I just think it's that you hit it well. And I was watching your good show last night, which I'd recommend for people to see when you get to Vegas. You got to go to the Thunderbird to check out his Martinis and Magic show. But the point is that it is not, the show is not about liquids or about the drinks. It's about a lifestyle, you know, kind of like the Rat Pack kind of a thing. And the thing that you're trying to do with the showroom even itself, and every little detail and the chandeliers and the sides, and everything of trying to bring back something, and you know, I think it's marvelous.
You were sober enough to look up and see the chandeliers. That's good.
Well, I was laying down. You know.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, it's just an extension. Everybody, I fought for years. You know, when you establish something, so I established this thing with the Dove Act, and they were associating me with Fred Astaire, and then I started doing illusions again because I started as an illusionist. I started in Scala. And no one wants to accept that because they see you a certain way, but it's usually the magicians, right? Yeah. So they got past that, right? Then they got past, I have a solo act, so it's the same style, same look, but, you know, no chicks, no birds, classic magic, you know, more up-tempo, cool music, something like the music we're listening to here.
Yeah, we've if you heard that in the background over here, that was Goldfinger, Shirley Bassey.
That's right.
You just heard Dean Martin, and so this is just a great vibe. I love this bar. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. No, we're here
I'm
to have fun.
Loving this place.
So now it's like I'm always following myself. So this is a merge between what I really love. I grew up listening to Frank Sinatra and Van Halen, you know, rock and roll. And that's why I'm so disturbed. I'm a different person kind of offstage. I'm still the same, but I dress differently. I mean, we were talking last night, if I could wear a suit and fedora all the time, I probably could, but that's not what this generation is.
Yeah.
And the climate's not rainy and cold enough. And there's no hat checks anymore.
Yeah.
And they look at you funny if you keep your hat on everywhere.
You know, that would be something kind of funny, I think, you know, because in Vegas that people dress casually, you know, shorts and everything, and it's not uncommon for people to wear baseball caps and to wherever they are. I'm with you 100%, 100%, and I think it's disrespectful. My point being is, to add to that, you could have a hat check, and you have a girl who's going to, somebody comes in, and, you know, they say, oh, sir, you're going to need to check your hat.
Right.
And they can, even if it's a baseball cap, they're going to have to take it off in there to check the hat.
Yeah. That's food for thought down the road, baby steps.
Yeah.
But, you know, in general, there are two types of people that wear hats. I'm the one that, A, I like hats, and if I'm having a bad hair day, you know, it's I go to the gym. I got my Saints shirt I represent. I got my Saints hat on. It's different. But I don't like to be seen in a baseball hat. You never know. It's just too common. It's too... Truckers wear baseball hats, you know. Youth who can be good, bad, or indifferent wear them backwards. It's just like, it's just not... You're not identifying your own personality, I don't think. You have to find your own, not look like everybody else. And everybody used to do that, you know? I mean, there were companies that would sell 75 different fedoras, not just one.
Really?
Yeah. So now, I mean, all baseball caps kind of look the same. They just got a different logo. You know, it's like, so people aren't distinctive enough. They're not encouraged to, because there aren't places like my place where you walk in, and unless you just stepped out of the trailer, you feel kind of underdressed and uncomfortable. If, because the room suggests, well, I should have been smart casual at least, you know?
That's true. And you're trying to bring back that era, because back in that time, the days in the 50s, I guess, whenever that people would dress up to go to the casino.
Well, yeah.
You know, just like in the airlines, you know, it used to be that you'd wear a coat and tie just to fly.
Yeah. Well, flying used to be, Channing used to tell me the stories, like...
Channing Pollock.
Yeah, Channing Pollock with the Pan American with the big panorama windows. He'd walk in with two cases. One had the birds, one had the cage and the tux and whatever else he needed. He just walked on. No security, no this. Sat down. You slept, you had your cocktails for free, you did this, you had a nice meal.
Or they took off.
And that was it. You know, it was like being, you know, in a high-class train in a way. And everything's gone to, and Vegas has become that way. Push the people through. Boom, boom, boom. And there is a place, and there isn't a place for... A friend of mine who's a young guy, and you saw him last night, his name's Star. He has his own designer jackets and wear. He was just in Milan. He even said after sitting there, he's been to the show twice, is there a bar where we can hear more of this music? He said, no, this is it. This is it. You can't. There is no club where you go in and they're playing the American Songbook or even playing Pacific jazz. I just discovered Pacific jazz. I wasn't a huge jazz person.
What is that?
Pacific jazz was created in California. I don't know a lot about it. All I know is there's a show on Netflix called Bosch. Here, we're not even talking about magic.
No,
right?
I love Bosch and the jazz he plays. That really got into that.
That's specific jazz.
I'm with you. I started watching that first season, and it was equal parts of jazz and police work. You know, I just loved that. And, yeah, I've watched all the series.
And whoever trains him to fight, he's doing Aikido, which is pretty cool. So if you're special forces hand-to-hand, that's one of the things you learn. So there's... I like watching TV where I don't have to question it, like, you know, where you're a script supervisor and the editing's wrong or something, because watching a good show is my escapism. My brain is going a million miles an hour. I don't want
to... So that's relaxing to you?
Yeah, it's like...
A movie?
There's a movie, The First Blade, right? So Wesley Snipes is a superhuman, cool vampire killer, but his leather jacket is pleather. You can tell it's pleather. You know, it's like, you can afford this underground lair, but you can't afford real leather.
Real leather. That's funny. That is funny.
So anyways, we're digressing.
We were talking, you'd mentioned about your bird act, and that's one thing I don't want people to misrepresent in thinking when they're coming to see your show that you're going to be doing that, because your classic Fred Astaire act that you had worked at the Scala and every place, you know, in years past, that now this is something that... I assume that you're still doing like special occasions and for some corporate shows and things, but your Martinis and Magic show is something that is really more of you, where you're speaking to the audience and they're getting to know your personality.
Yeah, when you're in Top Hat and Tails, that's a statement. And anybody does a Top Hat and Tails act or does a bird act, you don't need to open with that. If you're insecure, and I'm not picking on anybody or anything like this, is the way I feel. But I started as an illusionist. I told you in the burlesque, and how many shows a day in different and silent.
Tell me a little bit about that, because people may not know about that.
Okay, well, we're going to segue to the fact is, you got to have a strong opener, strong closer. And if the strongest opener you got is an act that you've become famous for, why would you follow that? How do you follow that? And why do you want to work that hard? And I don't mean working hard. When you do 9 to 12 minutes, or like Channing 7, I'm currently doing like Channing right now, 7 birds, 7 minutes. You're doing an illusion show in 7 minutes. That's the statement. You don't need to do anything else. Why would you want to affect that? When I go on stage with the fedora and the double-breasted, and I can talk to the audience, and they can get to know me, and I'm self-deprecating, and they get to know who you are, and you have a lot of fun. You can't do that in Top Hat and Tails. And plus, I don't want to leave the stage for 15 minutes comfortably without rushing, 15 minutes to get out of the tails, because I wear full tails. There's no fake shirt. There's no fake this, that. It's a full set of tails.
Hold that thought. Pause for just a minute. While this song is playing right here, I was going to tell you, this was the song I was going to recommend, that you, when you start to do the floating table and you, you know, have something with, you're talking about a tiki god, to have
background
this song,
music.
This
background,
this particular song.
Okay, and we're going to discuss what that is afterwards. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Because this is, yeah, I, particularly this version where you hear the birds in the background and everything, you know, calling.
That's pretty smart. That's pretty smart. You know, I created that routine. I'm... what, you know, was like the tiki magician. I'd worked the first Tiki Oasis in San Diego when it was cold in May under a tent. I went on at 2 a.m. They were still all wide awake, God bless them. Did an hour and a half. Made it snow at the end, so it's never, everybody was bragging, he made it snow inside. I wrote that routine in 24 hours specifically for that. And it really hasn't changed much since. So that's good. I'm glad you brought that up, because sometimes you got to revisit the music sometimes, because sometimes you've nailed the music right,
right
out of the gate.
And the thing that you did, it was okay music, but it wasn't. I was expecting this, because this says what you were trying to...
Gotcha.
About tiki gods. This says it to me.
You know? Yeah. See, and here's the thing. I like it when people give me feedback. Magicians, if I ask them for feedback, I'm not going to get the right feedback. The lay audience is going to get you feedback, because maybe they don't have the experience. Now, a director of a playwright might come up to you, and they have a different perspective. They might understand magic, but they'll be able to open your eyes to something new. And you're worldly. You do a lot of stuff. So that's really good that you brought that up, you know, because I see it right now. I'll give you an example. I do the brooms the way I think they should be done, with brooms and with all the positions. And I got permission years ago because my first wife knew Richie already. Richie already, actually, when she was a kid, walked him through everything that the daughter had to do in case the daughter got sick, when Shimada and Richie would work together. For those of you who don't know, I used to be married to Lisa Shimada for 10 years, my first wife, and whose now name is Luna.
Luna, I was going to say Luna.
Yeah. Yeah, but I know her as Lisa. And that being said, we called up the son one day and he said, you know, my husband would really like to do that routine. You know, he's all into the Spanish culture and all that. He can pull it off. Are you okay with that? And he said, sure, fine. And I was using this other, it's really easy for me to do romantic magic. Easy, it comes easy. It's hard to have a good fast pace or a medium pace. You know, it's like shadow illusions. There's a million of them, but you, more than two, you know, so it's hard. More than two level, more than two cut, more than two, you know?
You mean in the same show?
Well, not in the same show, just in your repertoire, because it's like, you know, you're cutting yourself thin. So I digress from that for a moment. Okay, so I had this romantic music, and I was just like, but I always had this Dean Martin tune I always wanted to use, always wanted to use, always wanted to use. And I'm driving one day, and all of a sudden, brooms came into my head. The music started, and it's Sway with Dean Martin. That has that
Sway
Latin undertone. And I could see Ricciardi doing it, and I could see me doing it. And I changed it immediately. But I should have changed that 2 years ago, but I didn't have anybody like you to see it from the outside and tell me.
Well,
because you have a good ear for music.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are afraid of telling somebody, you know, some opinions, because it's like the person is doing it and they've got something down. You know, I've recommended lines to other people because I know them and I feel friendly enough. It's like, you know, you can reject it and say, hey, no, that's BS, or I don't like that, or whatever. And, you know, speaking of that, I think a lot of times that comedians, professional comedians, are a little bit reluctant to take a line from somebody outside of their tight-knit circle, if you will.
Right.
The reason being is that, let's say I heard this joke from somebody else who may have gotten that from another comedian.
Right.
And so if I share it with, you know, somebody who's funny, they're going to, you know, have to think at the back of their mind, is that an original line? Was that yours?
Right.
Or did you get that from somebody else who, I don't want to end up doing something that people accuse me of stealing. When I didn't steal, I got it from you, which you didn't intend to steal. You see what I'm saying?
Any lines of mine that are common, they're all dead.
Old lines.
Yeah.
So anyhow, we were off on music.
Yes.
You remember what we were saying?
About
birds, and we talked about
costuming.
Costuming
that. Yeah. So you come out, you establish your image right out of the bat.
Yeah.
You don't have to change it. So it's still.
But what if you come out of that? Down to that image. In other words, you created like an image of a sophisticated, you know, Fred Astaire, you know, a solid 7-minute act. Can you then go and start talking and doing something?
Well, yeah. Okay. Well, let me have your opinion on this. You saw the opening. The opening starts with the music. I'm drinking a martini. I set it down. I go into World on the String with Sinatra.
The rope,
boom. By the time I'm finished, the audience loves you within the first 20 seconds, and then you can do anything. That's what Channing said. You got to turn around. You got to do your first trick in 20 seconds. Well, my first trick in 20 seconds is me. It's the image. Just like there, the first 20 seconds, I've said it's called Martinis and Magic. I toast them. They applaud right away. They're into it. Oh, man, the guy's drinking already on stage, right? And I go into a place with a Sinatra tune that they're familiar with, with some, what I think is very strong magic. It ends surprisingly. Yes. I bow. I take another drink.
Yeah.
And then what's the next thing I do? I do something with liquor, but then I go smoke, which is taboo.
Yeah.
And no one, they accept it because they already understand the image. They're already brought back to a place where it's acceptable.
It's acceptable, exactly. Yeah.
So you, if you understand your image and you're not afraid, I mean, it is hard to have, you know, when you've done that. I'm very lucky I started basically, if anything, no matter where I worked. Like, we had talked, oh, we were talking about this. So the only place when I was 13 years old with a stage in the spotlight was a burlesque house called the Penthouse. And the liquor laws in those days, so long as you didn't go from backstage, you could work. So the dancers, and in those days, they would come out fully clothed. They wouldn't come out with no clothes on and just stick to the floor right away.
What year was that?
What year was that? 1973.
Because I remember that there were topless...
frozen to death, as Billy McComb would say.
but back then, there were topless dancers, you know, that showgirls and everything.
Yeah, it was. It was called striptease. I mean, I worked with Tempest Storm, and she was old then. And I'm backstage, and I'm just watching her take off my glove, and I'm like, I'm 14 then, and I'm going, oh, my God, I'm going to explode. She's taking off her glove.
Yeah.
Striptease.
Yeah.
It's not like that anymore.
Right.
So each dancer would do a 20-minute set. Then I would do a 20-minute set where they reset their little stories, their plots, their couches, whatever. Then three more 20-minute sets, and I would do a 20-minute set. Then three more 20-minute sets, and then by 2 a.m. I'm done. And then I would hitchhike home or drive, and depending whether I was legally could drive or if my license had been taken away for speeding, because I was a rapscallion back in those days. And, you know, I had hair way down to here and all that stuff. And,
wow. I'd like to see a picture of that.
It's right there.
Business in front, party in back.
Yeah, no, it's on the Demare public page.
Okay.
So I've got the James Demare, you know, you have all your friends. So I got the Demare public page. There's a older picture.
Facebook page.
Yeah, Facebook page. And so anyways, you really, I guess... I didn't understand, like, I went through a huge Doug Henning phase. I walk into a, you know, I got the whole, and I got the overalls, and I got the stars, and I did the Henning, and I built all the stuff. I did his show. Sands, paper, balloons, sword suspension, sub-trunk, zigzag. I did it.
Yeah.
I met Doug. I have a picture with Doug. And the reason I was able to build a couple things, two things. One, I said, I really like that, Nat. Do you mind if I do? And he went, I don't care. Very generous.
Yeah.
I didn't know what was called scaling with Jarrett, what the old guys used to do when they used to rip each other off, and Jarrett coined it as scaling. If you have a picture of the guy and you know how tall he is standing by his prop, you can build the prop.
That's correct.
So I had a picture of me and Doug.
Yeah.
I had him standing beside stuff, and for example, underneath of my kitchen table was the exact size of the sub trunk, so I measured it. Uh-huh. So my sub trunk fit underneath, you know, it's like, yeah. But I didn't know. I'm not a magic builder. It's like I learned so much from Bill Smith working in his shop. Yeah. Like, and we're jumping around, but it's okay.
How long did you work with Bill?
Well, no, I didn't work for Bill. It's just I've known Bill. So
okay.
He lets me come in and do stuff.
Oh, I see.
But then I would watch the other guys, like a T-nut. You know what a T-nut is, right? Basically a washer with a threaded insert.
Okay.
I used to just drill a hole and pound them in.
Okay.
And they would work. They'd be straight. They wouldn't. Well, this is why magic props cost so much. First, you drill the pilot hole. Then you drill the hole that the bolt's got to go through.
Right.
Then you drill partway down for the shoulder of the T-nut. Then you paddle out the area for the T-nut so it's flush.
Right.
Then you put set screws in so the T-nut can't pop out. That's 5 to 10 minutes each T-nut. If a prop needs 20 of those, you're there all day.
Yeah.
To properly put on a 7-foot hinge on a prop, that's a little bit of time setting up, drilling it so the wood won't crack. So when you screw in those screws, it's like it's anchored in.
That is another thing that's important, though, because a lot of times people, if you would just drill it right into there, it's going to crack the wood.
It cracks everything.
You start all over.
So I didn't know that when I was younger.
Yeah.
So
trial
like,
and error.
Yeah, so it's like anything in life. You know, you learn. So when the Bird Act got... Doing what I, when I was younger, made me a better manipulator. Being a manipulator made me a better illusionist. Being a better illusionist made me a better close-up guy. Getting better at close-up may be better at doing illusions and stuff because you can take from all of them. So if you can become a well-rounded, you know, magician, which sometimes I kick myself in the head because I do too much crap. I mean, three full illusion shows, the bird act, the solo act, the 90-minute one-man, the hybrid of this show, and I can do close-up. I just want to stop creating, but you wake up in the middle of the night still and go, oh, that would be a good idea. Or like I told you the other night, I got a set of P&L rice bowls, and I'm going, okay, I've had these for 40 years for a reason. How, you know, what am I going to do with them, you know? So,
but how many hours a day would you practice? In other words, you've got all these different acts, and you're doing one right now that is for your regular show, so that you don't have to rehearse because that's your show. But for your dove act, you don't do it on a regular basis. Do you still bring your doves out and rehearse with the way they're trained?
Or? Yeah. What I'll do is a week before the show, the flyer's going to the garage. It's fully let out with lighting and something that'll be in Dove Whispers 3. I figured out...
Dove Whispers is your DVD series?
DVD, which I'm giving you today. And for those of you who have it, you know what I'm talking about. You know my personality. I rant a lot. I shoot straight. You got to think like a bird, right? Like
bird brain.
Yeah. And I told you some things about steals and stuff where the bird's comfortable. What's a bird's reaction? How to get them to...
Real quickly, I thought that was very interesting about how that whenever that you don't want to jerk a bird out because they're pulling against you. Just think about that whenever that you're trying to, I don't know how many people have been on a farm trying to push a sheep, you know, or a horse or whatever, you know, they're going to go against you.
Right.
So
but
you have to do it easily.
But if you let them know what you want and back off and then go again, oh, I get it. He wants me to go forward.
Right. You don't whip it out.
No. My bird only travels 2 inches. I do the rest. It just looks like it's really fast. But, you know, it's like when I have to borrow birds when I go overseas, if it's not a long job, I ask for 20 doves. I'm only going to use 7 or 8. The reason is I weed them out.
Now, what you ask for, so the doves are waiting for you when you get there overseas?
Yeah, they supply them. And I usually now, I've had a bad experience borrowing magicians' birds because most magicians, no offense, most magicians, treat them like props. So their tails are beat up or their fingernails are too long or they're missing a toe or they got crap all over them, you know.
It's one of my favorite James Bond movies, by the way. You only live twice.
Oh, yeah. Look at this. You're loving this place.
I do.
So if I get them straight off the bird farm, first of all, they haven't picked up any bad habits. I know that bird's not going to die in my jacket. I don't know if that bird's unhealthy. I don't know if the guy's yanked it to death. I don't know if it's laid so many eggs. I don't know how old it is. I don't want to be responsible, you know, the bird dies with me or something happens. So 20 fresh birds off the farm. Then I find usually the bird that appears on the scarf, I have to find a nice, healthy bird that just likes to flap and land, that won't take off. Boom, he gets marked right away. Then I find a nice, strong bird for the dove on cane. Bird that likes to flutter, likes to grab the cane, and likes to keep fluttering. I find birds that like to fly back to me. I start tossing them. Naturally, they don't want to fly. They want to come back to me. They're going, the finger is security. And like in the DVD, I show that my perches are the same size as my finger, so they're used to that security.
Okay.
It's about the same size, right?
I never thought about that.
So that's how I can, you know, I've actually trained a flyer in 2 days in Perth when I was on tour there. It doesn't always happen that way. I have another opening, but you know, you want your opening. The doubles, they're going to be the smallest birds. I don't have a huge frame. I'm not like Channing. I want them to be uber comfortable.
And Danny was how tall? Like 6'4"?
Yeah. And very slender. Excuse me, very slender. And I want them to be the most comfortable. And I use females a lot. So I'm always having to watch them. I got to check them 24 hours before I use them to see if the vent bone is wide. And then the next day, I got to make sure an egg isn't coming down. Because an egg comes down within 24 hours. See, a lot of stuff.
I've actually produced a dove one time, and I wondered why I kept coming off the perch, and it would land on the floor. I kept picking up, putting it on the perch, and then when I made it vanish, I noticed when I was unloading it later in the box, it had laid an egg.
Yep. I've had doves lay eggs on me, fall asleep. Fall asleep and wake up and not know where they are and freak out.
That's funny.
My jacket's doing the marimba, so now I got to produce them out of order. I'm not going to wait. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
But experience, I know what's going on. And
yeah.
But and then when you know you're act enough, you can do it out of order.
I think it's interesting also the way that we were talking last evening about how you treat your doves like they are real animate objects and, you know, not something that's just an inanimate object.
Hey.
Because they are living creatures, you know. Yeah. And you were saying about how that you shouldn't be putting them in certain kinds of holders that are going to constrict their breathing and that kind
of thing. Yeah, well, a lot of people don't know, and it's been a while since I knew this fun fact. I think it's twice. A dove has to take two, could be three, but they take at least two more breaths than we do, and they don't breathe. We're breathing front to back. They breathe sideways.
So by putting them in a holder, that,
well, it's it. You can, but it's the way they're restricted, and they have to. You don't want to. Again, so when I'm using holders, the bird's got to want to be in there, and it's better when you're starting with a bird that it's a younger bird, because it's just 6 months ago it was in an egg.
Yeah.
It's used to be confined. You find a bird that's okay with being confined, it's not going to freak out on you.
Yeah.
It's not going to hyperventilate. It's not going to. Heck, when I was on the cruise ship, they couldn't regulate the humidity. I brought on a portable air conditioner.
Just for your dog?
Yeah, and they thought I was high maintenance, all that. And again, Bill Smith stuck up for me. He says, you should be happy more magicians aren't like James.
And you are not like James.
Huh?
Are not like
no,
James.
No, or like James, that he goes to so like much James. Trouble, yeah, that he's got a little portable air conditioner for his bird.
You were talking also about dove dust, and talk a little bit about that. I think that's interesting, because I was saying about how that is supposed to be bad for, you know, David Oliver and other people, you know, have had lung problems due to living with their doves, basically.
Well, if you think it's bad for...
You need to take another drink there.
Our
go ahead.
Lungs. Yeah, well, I can keep on. If you think it's bad for our lungs, imagine the dove.
Yeah, because they have a small beak and they've got small nostrils and small lungs.
Small everything, right? Yeah. And they're breathing twice as often. They take twice as many breaths. The dust isn't good for them. In the wild, it rains. The dust can come off. That's why my birds are outside all the time. They were even outside. I told you this. They were outside in the winter with these see-through plastic things over the big cage with a timed block heater that, you know, when it goes below, you know, about 48, 49 degrees, because they acclimate, but there's a point to where it gets a little too cold for them. They ruffle up. They're happy. So you, and I've talked to other bird people and stuff, but I like to have them inside now, because during the winter, I don't pay as much attention to them. There's a thing a dove can get called trichomotus, and they get really, really skinny even though they're eating all the time. So you can see them. They look just fine, but they're wasting away. And that's the thing. I'm not trying to push the DVD. I've just said it all on there. There's little dots that get on the back of their throat. So every time
you can't see those either.
Yeah, you open up their mouth, you look down, they got little white dots, they got trichomotis. And then they need antibiotics from a vet. Yeah. So there's all these little things. It's really, look, if I was starting today, I wouldn't be doing a bird act.
Really?
It's a lot easier to maintain a full evening illusion show. I mean, I love it, but I just know better. Traveling, it's a pain. It's this.
It's like traveling with children.
Well, if I was starting now, knowing what I know, would I do it? Right? And if I didn't know what I knew, like I tell people now, is where you, like, okay, Channing said this to me, he discouraged me, where are you going to work in top hat and tails? There's only five nice places in the world to work. And I said, well, I guess I'll work them a lot. And I did, and a few more opened up, luckily. But everybody with PETA and all this stuff, they just, you know, it's just like the circus. There are some good people that treat circus animals, but in general, they're props. In general, animals are props for magicians. That whole thing of pulling a... No one ever asked a rabbit, if you're pulling it by the ears, that you're yanking their veins and their blood. Oh, no one thought about it until somebody went, well, wait a minute, look at that.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just no matter what we do, even not working with animals, just...
Well, you're saying that you wouldn't work with it. Go ahead.
I'll give you an example. And I used to do this trick, and one day I thought to myself, I must be hurting this bird. Balloon to dove. Barehanded. Pop. Bang. So you got a balloon this size, a bird that's this small. Imagine, put that in perspective. A balloon as big as this hut we're in the tiki thing that blows up next to our ear. That's not going to cause some damage?
Huh.
So magicians are like dying birds. I'm against that. All these things I used to do until I learned better. If you have to do things to your birds or do things, that's not magical. If you have to have colored birds, then you think that's going to make you good, you're missing the boat. It's all about you. The magic is just the vehicle. Right, they need to remember you. It's one time before I knew what was going to happen with my image and all this. Like with Lance, get me the guy with the lamppost. Nora Mielsen, get me the guy with the violin. Channing used to be get me the guy with the birds.
Yeah.
Right, Shimada, get me the Asian guy in tails. Right, oh great, so get me the guy who has this cage and it shrinks and he's got a little, like, you know, because that's my signature move. I go, what's my signature going to be? Well, it was get me the Fred guy. No, get me the Fred Astaire guy. Nothing to do with magic. And what was great is, and I'm sure a lot of you out there have this and you can work towards this, I've never been compared to another magician until later on in life. Now I get compared to some masters, which is really nice, but I was never in Channing or Shimada's or anybody's shadow. I was always compared to Fred Astaire, which really used to piss me off. Excuse my French. We're allowed. I'm sure you've heard that word on HBO. Look at it, I'm looking at the podcast muff, and he'll explain that later. Like I can see you out there, and I'm apologizing. And I lost my train of thought. Where was I? Bring me back, podcast boy.
You're talking about how you were like Channing Pollock, and
I was never under anybody's thing. So I'm always getting compared to a movie star when I was younger. How cool is that? So the magic already spoke for itself. It wasn't important. It was always image, image, image. And that's why now, image, image, image. You know, image is everything.
That's why it surprised me when you make the comment, then, Jim, that you're going to want... I wish I had never done Birds, but just done Illusions. When that is what has made you successful.
Well, now...
Everybody does Illusions.
Yeah. It's not that. It's... There would be more, I would have had different opportunities as I had, but I've had some great opportunities. It's just sometimes, you know, my problem is I'll do the Bird Act for 2 years, I'll lose my illusion crew. I'll do the illusions for 2 or 3 years, I might lose the assistant, unless she can do the illusions with me. And it's like one of those vicious circles, you know, but that's the way it is. But like a lot of the great younger illusionists who are out there who are our age now, like the Rick Thomases and the Tim Coles and all those people, they stuck to that one thing. Right? So I've worked for agents and done an illusion show, knocked it out of the park. 6 months later, they'd hired somebody else.
Why?
I said, hey, I just did that for you, and you said I was your next guy. And they went, oh, I forgot. They forgot because in their head, I'm still Demare Astaire, Top Hat and Tails. So following yourself, so why would I do that to myself on stage? Right? And you can have different sides to your character, different sides you want to express. When I'm in Top Hat and Tails, that guy doesn't talk. He doesn't say a word unless a bird takes off.
Well, now that looks like Johnny Thompson, you know, when he is the great Tom Sony.
Yeah.
And he has a character and it's very funny. And so he continues that when he finally starts his talking act. He says, thank you very much.
Right.
You know, and he starts talking.
It's perfect timing.
Exactly.
And they don't expect it coming.
Right.
So, yeah, so when I do have to stop, because I like to stop if a bird does take off and make sure the bird's okay. People yell out, it speaks, you know, they're
right.
So surprised.
Yeah.
So, and I apologize, we're jumping around a lot here, but that's good. You're finding out some things you may or might have known, and we're just having a little fun, folks, as Dean Martin used to say.
Okay, I want to get back over to DeCannon and the burlesque and the mob stories.
Okay, so my first real experience to get my chops was at a place called The Penthouse. It's on Seymour Street in Vancouver. And it was
you got a Seymour too, didn't you?
Huh?
You got a Seymour too, didn't you? The burlesque shows. I see more.
Boom. Well, let's talk.
Don't put that in your show.
Let's talk about the thing on your microphone.
this little muff thing, yeah. This
Mr. Muff the microphone. Come on, I'm sure people have brought this up before, have they? Or no?
Yes, they do all the time.
All the time.
Yeah, I call it the dead cat.
There we go. Okay. Now, there's so much material I could do on this right now, and I'm not going to. I could just take you with me on stage every night and do 10 minutes, right? No magic. So, like I said, only place with a stage in a spotlight. But it was owned by the Filippone Brothers. And I'm working for free.
This is Vancouver?
Yeah. From when I was 13, I worked there steadily and then off and on until I was about 17 or 18. Breaking in stuff, illusions, you know, chucking them back and forth. So I'm working for free. And one night the guy calls me. And now this is a club that's been there since the late 30s. I think it used to be during Prohibition. What's called an Under the Bottle Club. So there were still brackets under the original tables where you would put your Mickey. And it was like a couple bucks for orange juice.
So if the cops came in, you could hide that or something?
Yeah, it was always there. It was always under there because the cops would just come look around. They would get their payoff and they would go. But they legally, at least they were good enough that if we see a bottle, we have to bust you.
So wait a minute. In Canada, you had prohibition there too?
Yep.
Was that during the same time as America? I did not know that.
I don't know my history that much because I was only a little guy.
Yeah.
But they're doing mob tours now of the Penthouse, and there's a book. And I'm reaching out to the, I think it's the grandson of the man I work for, who is actually, I'm going to get to the story, which is interesting, and say, hey, I used to be there, and I want to come up, and I'd like to talk about your dad and some stuff, and maybe we can do a charity show or something, you know, on that stage, because it's been, okay, I was 13, I'm 58, you do the math, I'm not good at the high numbers, but, you know.
45.
Yeah, okay, see, you're good. Pulls me into the office one day, he goes, so I don't know whether to fire you, and my heart drops, or pay you. I go, what's the problem? He says, well, the pros know the Johns are watching you, and you're taking time away from them, and they know you're working for free. So if I pay you, I can shut the bitches up. So I would get $20 a week, and that would pay for the bus or the whatever, yeah, or, you know, however I was getting back and forth, or hitchhiking, or however I was getting back and forth at the time.
And you left your illusions there at the show? At the
Yeah. And so I would work there with plenty of room, you know, didn't have to worry about anything, you know, not even lock it up, you know. And so that was a good experience. And then I was still in Vancouver at the time, and the guy who had hired me, he was found dead, safe was broken open, just like a mob hit, robbed him, this and that, old school. No one ever talked about it. So now the reason I'm, enough time's gone by, I'd like to talk to the son. Says, I was around when that happened. Your dad, there's only reason, there's a couple of reasons I'm around today. My father, who would do a couple of tricks, but not really magic tricks. He'd follow this guy around in Newfoundland, a little town we lived in, and he had seen him so many times he would do his cleanup work, his dirty work. He used to do the coin in the glass where it vanishes, you hear a clink.
And
my dad would do the cleanup work, and the guy was shocked for a second, but he would go here, so we taught it to my dad. And my dad used to do this other cool trick too. He'd take a button and tie a thread and stick the thread to the top of a ceiling. Then he would take a match and light the thread would go whoosh, and the button would stay there floating, and he would clap his hands and the button would fall into your hand. And that is, like, so cool. So
because of the wax that would melt when the
heat
hit it?
It was this type of thread, the way it was made. The outer core would melt away, and just like invisible thread, the one strand of inner core would stay.
Yeah.
And this guy, by accident, had figured this out. And then when he clapped his hands, the air was enough to make the ash. Basically, that last thread was ash.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
It does.
And I've tried to duplicate that trick, and I did it when I was 14, and then I had a spool of thread, I can't find it, and it's gone. It's, you know. But it's like, how smart was this guy? And he was just a little, not even a carny guy. He didn't even call himself a magician. He would just do a couple parlor tricks. So my dad would never show
me. Was he a little con man or something?
No,
he kind of did,
no,
like,
no. It's just, you know,
bets.
It was a fishing village. He would just go around and just, that was his thing. When this guy ate, well, he got his drinks for free.
So it was bar bets.
So yeah, bar tricks, yeah. So he would never show me the coin trick. So I never knew how it was done, and he would always do it. So there was a Houdini book, and one, I don't remember which one it is, but the secret's in a Houdini book. You know, because Walter Gibson wrote some of the books. So then I turned around and did it for my dad, but I changed the way it was done. And I fooled him with his own trick. And still to this day, if I'm doing a close-up show, I really like to do the coin. I really love to do the coin in the glass, you know?
And that's one with the glass disc?
Glass disc.
That's one of the first tricks I learned, too.
So I introduced this oriental bowl. I said, this is very sacred. And I have an oriental coin that's the same size as a bigger, because it was a lot easier to get the lenses off a bigger flashlight.
Yeah.
And my dad used to get them from a smaller flashlight, and now they're plastic. So I found an oriental coin, and I said, you know, legend goes, I haven't done this forever, so I'm paraphrasing, goes, if the coin ever leaves its owner, which has the bowl, it always finds its way back. That's why the owner always had it on display and was never worried about any thieves. I'll give an example. We're going to steal it under the cover of night. Take a look. Hold the bowl. Now, you can put your hands on the top, feel the bowl. You're going to feel it happen. Don't look, because there's going to be a flash of light, and I don't want to be for blinding you. And it would go bing, and they would feel the bowl and the shrieks from people, because they're holding the bowl and they feel it clink.
Yeah.
So that little extra thing now took a little trick into a nice little mystery. And it goes back to the old magic where everything was, when I traveled in the Far East, I met a fakir, you know? It's like Ravine used to do. And she could, like the whole Keller patter, you know? And she could be there all night, the princess floating in the air.
That's right.
And you can't get away with a lot of that, but sometimes you can.
Yeah.
Like, you've seen my show. I like to tell a little, well, basically it's like when, you know, when I do Paul Daniels, you know.
I was about to talk about that. I love that yeah, cardboard box trick.
Yeah. So he has to do the material to rationalize why this box looks this way.
Your routine makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So,
and you said that Paul said that was the hardest thing, is the routine of that, because otherwise it's,
the routine
it's
of
a
that.
Puzzle.
But because he can get away with corny, and you see my show, it's all corny.
Yeah.
It's all self-deprecating, and I do it tongue-in-cheek. And I used to work in comedy clubs. I knew that I could work with that. I could work it. I could make that happen. So it's making something that's so improbable. So when something does happen, it's like when you see me do the sketch pad.
Yeah.
There's so many bad jokes that when magic finally happens, the magic's stronger because he's not going to do anything. He's just pulling our leg. It's just a bunch of gags.
Yeah.
So I learned that earlier on, stretching something out to the point to where they're about ready to lynch you. They're at the point where they're just, okay, we've had enough. And if you can just get before that so they still like you, and then you can't do that with everything.
No.
You know? Sure. Same thing. It's like the sucker die box. Okay, we get it. Turn it around. Blah, blah, blah. Just open the other gut. Oh, it's not there.
Right.
You know?
Well, magician's in trouble is a syndrome, you know, that people can buy into.
Oh, and I'm always in trouble.
Yeah.
On and off the stage.
Now, Ricciardi, I mean, there are a lot of people that you've known being in Vegas, and well, you lived in L.A. for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Been in Vegas for a long time here as well. And did you know Ricciardi?
I never got to meet him. I was supposed to. He was in Nassau, and I was on Grand Bahama. And Lisa talked to him, and we were going to meet, and then he got ill. And then I didn't think, well, it's good. He didn't want to. Family, no one wanted him to come over. You know, he's pretty grouchy when he's like all us men. We're big babies. We get a hangnail. We're like this. We can take anything. We get sick. I don't know if you're one of those males. I get sick. I'm just like, pamper me, pamper me.
I was sick here a while back, and I had had food poisoning actually.
Right.
Just a few weeks ago, and I couldn't get out of bed, and I'd been traveling a lot, and I didn't have anything in the refrigerator. I wanted some chicken noodle soup. I didn't have a can of chicken and noodle, and so the grocery was nearby, but I couldn't get out of bed just to even drive a block.
You don't have Uber Eats where you are?
No, I didn't think of that. Yes, we do. Thank you.
Sorry.
I was just not thinking. You know, I was
only
felt so
because,
bad.
Because I think that's ridiculous. You know where I think it's ridiculous? McDonald's advertises Uber Eats. So you can't even go to... You have a car drive through the drive-thru for you and bring you drive-thru food.
That's funny.
Bada boom boom, thank you.
Yeah. That is funny. Well, you know, I was thinking of something that was kind of funny. Why does Carrot Top call himself Carrot Top when his hair is not like a carrot top? The carrot top is green, isn't it?
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Well, what's that old joke? Maybe the rug doesn't match the carpet? The
Chesterfield
doesn't match the...
Yeah.
Maybe Carrot Top is another top. Maybe we're looking at him upside down. I don't know.
That was another James Bond line that was from Diamonds Are Forever, and he was talking to Joel St. John. He said, well, as long as the cuffs match the collar.
That's right. So, you know, we're just turn the carrot upside down. I don't know. Look, you took me there, baby.
I'm
going to go there. You take me there.
So, you've been in Vegas. You've been doing this for like 2 years with the Martinis and Magic, and you're saying...
No, actually, Martinis and Magic got branded in around 2008. But I mean, I've always lived that
lifestyle.
But see, that came out of the full evening show was called Swingin' Tacky Tiki Martini Lounge Show. That's a mouthful too.
Swingin' Tacky Tiki
Martini Lounge Show, and that came out of I used to live in a hotel in L.A. It used to be called the Landmark. So Highland Gardens is the next one over from the castle. I lived there for 10 years. Beautiful German lady used to own it, and it was like it was paradise for a single guy because. It was European. I mean, it was a topless pool.
I remember that.
Right?
I stayed there once.
So I stayed. I was right above the pool. And apparently the suite I was in, because it was like a suite. It wasn't like a hotel. I mean, it was like 12 to 16-foot ceilings. That's where I taught Jade the floating ball. I put two eyelets in there. I said, let's work on this, you know? So apparently that was where Errol Flynn, that was reserved for him in the days where if he couldn't make it up the hill to his house, because he was the next hill over, that's where he would pass out in that room. Okay, now I brought that up for a reason why. I was living in a hotel for 10 years. Bring me back, see? I digress.
You talk about the Martini Tiki.
Okay, so then I was getting in the Tiki, and I'm a big fan of Brian Setzer. And Brian Setzer.
I love Brian Setzer.
Brian Setzer, isn't he awesome?
Yeah.
He's great. I mean, he brought back Big Band single-handedly, right?
I like Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, too.
Oh, yeah. And was it Pearl Nut Zippers or something Nut Zippers? Squirrel Nut Zippers.
Squirrel, yeah.
Something, yeah. And, there's so many of them that are really great. The girls were giving out lays before he went into what's that big amphitheater that's right there by the castle?
Hollywood Bowl.
Hollywood Bowl. And I went, oh, my God. So I got fake green grass. I got tiki torches up my balcony. You know, I already had a barbecue. And I had the faux 50s tiki lights, right? You know? And I called this Swingin' Tacky Tiki Martini Lounge. So I hadn't named the show, so when I was doing the full evening show at the castle, and the side stairs, which are different now, they didn't have screens there, I dressed them to look like tiki huts. They looked like little tiki huts, and they had tiki torches, but the place was all tikied out. The girls would put lays on everybody when they walked in just so I could do the joke, hey, I get to lay 50 people a night. Isn't that great? You know, just I'll take any cheap shot I can, right? So I'm out there saying, and welcome to... And I just thought about my balcony, the Swingin' Tacky Tiki Martini Lounge show, and it stuck. Yeah. I say, if you're familiar with it, next door is called the parlor, but the adult jacuzzi will open up in a few hours. Downstairs in the close-up room, we're going to be playing darts and pie gow, and a few, and I just made fun of all the rooms, right? Yeah. So it stuck. But now, since the branding of Martinis and Magic is really, it's really sticking. So when the eventuality comes that I move properties, because you got to grow, because I like the intimacy of this, but I can't do some of the cool stuff.
One of the nice things about your show now is it's not four-walled.
No.
So if you go someplace else, you're going to have to four-wall.
It's Vore Vegas. Well, no. The idea is I go to a place and say, they're going to go, you're not four-walling? No. We'll talk to you because there's no way you're not four-walling. So that's kind of my opening is, you got to be. No one.
For those who are listening who, by the way, who don't know what four-walling is, basically you are paying the rent for that room,
yeah.
Everything, all the publicity, yeah. And everything.
So Old Vegas used to be...
There's two wall and four wall.
They gave you the room. They didn't care. They just wanted people to go in. If there was nobody in the seats, they didn't care. If you wanted to see... It was always sold out.
You want people to gamble.
Yeah. If you wanted to see Sinatra, it was $5. Like, if you could get a ticket. Right? So, I want to do Old Vegas. It's got to be Old Vegas rules. And then the hotel has a vested interest in you.
Your show is $5?
Yeah. Yeah, no, at the Sands. The Sinatra show was $5.
Yeah, but your show.
Oh, my show, yeah. Well, I make a lot less than that after the ticket brokers and everybody gets something. So, but it's okay. The idea of just...
Four-walling.
Yeah. So you can do a two-wall. I wouldn't be opposed to that. That's where you're sharing the profit.
Yep.
You know? And I've gone into that in certain places in Hawaii and stuff, and I've done where you make a certain percentage of this amount, and then when you make this amount, your percentage is less. Then you tap out at this percent, and then the hotel's making 100%. You know, so, you know, you don't want to be greedy. There's other ways to do two walls where you just keep sharing percentages and numbers and all this. A four wall's easier. If they believe in you, this hotel believes in the branding. You know, they believe in Old Vegas. They believe in bringing the neighborhood up. I picked this place, A, in particular, because no one knew about the room in the room. I love the room. And I can afford...
What was in there before?
Huh?
What was in that room before?
It was called the Aruba, and it was just a black box. And they used to just have crap in there.
Did they have a show, or did they just store stuff?
No, it's just, you know, they would just have, like, raves and stuff in there. Then the guy bought it, rebranded it the Thunderbird, spent $5 million on the property.
But it's not the original Thunderbird.
No, it's not the original Thunderbird. That's why when the girl comes on stage and goes, change, change, and I say, honey, new Thunderbird, not old Thunderbird, no gaming tables, nothing going on here, darling. Vamos, vamos, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, I want... It's like anybody. It's you want the people you're working with to believe in you. You know? So it's a handshake deal. Yeah, we have a deal memo. You have to, but there's no contract. It's Old Vegas. I want all my business relationships to be, because a contract's only worth the paper it's written on. Right?
You want to have a relationship.
Yeah, they're going to break it or they're not. But if you have a personal relationship, you can have an argument. You can piss somebody off. But your relationship is stronger than that. And you can both sit down and go, okay, yeah, you were probably right. Heat of the moment, blah, 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 blah. Because you both have a vested interest and you both want it to work. And I prefer that.
Yeah.
I prefer to have...
Both have skin in the game.
Exactly. Exactly. Not going there.
Yeah.
You couldn't see him smile because this is a podcast.
Yeah. So that is the difference, by the way. So so that's what you're doing, is you actually have an engagement with the hotel.
Yeah. Which so the deal is I take the door, they get food and beverage.
Yeah.
100%. Two wall would be you might split the door, you split the booze, you split everything. Easier this way. But I've never had to produce my own show, and having to learn how to broker tickets and do all this stuff is a real pain in the ass. And it is a pain in the ass in a property that's not going to develop for 2 years.
Do you have your show like in half-price tickets?
Hmm?
Do you have arranged with half-price tickets or anything?
There are some companies like that I do. There's one in particular I want, which I'm not going to talk about. I don't want to jinx it. But those relationships take a while, because even though you're the new kid on the block and the people see it, it's about the branding. They see something new. It doesn't mean they're going to buy it. They see something new. They want to go with something. They've seen that logo 100 times. Around the 110th time, they're going to click on it because they're interested now. It's really funny how that works. You would think they would see something new and click on it right away. No, their brain goes back to comfort. That's why billboards. You know, we have billboards around town.
Is your face on the billboard?
Yeah, the logo is there. But it's one of those digital billboards that if you're lucky enough, every
you
20 minutes,
yeah, right.
But almost everybody's like that. Yeah. It's hit or miss in this town. But there's so many people in this town and so much traffic.
Are you on cabbacks? Are you on cabbacks?
Nope. Right now, the idea is not to make the mistakes everybody else makes. Spend a lot of money on advertising, do all this television, have five shows a week, blah, 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 have no seats, lose your ass. And then also, the hotel, regardless, they're not going to want to. And they just put $5 million into the property. They're not in the position to, you know, go halfers with me. Okay, let's do $20,000 a month. That's 10 apiece, right?
Yeah.
They've got a chapel. They got this. Easier. Break it in slowly.
I'm sure they had a wedding chapel right next door.
Oh, my God. Hey, if you want to get married in Vegas, they have a living tree in the chapel.
What?
You didn't see the other side?
I saw the chapel.
No, there's two chapels. There's the little one.
What's a living tree?
They actually, instead of tearing this tree down, they built the big chapel around the tree.
Wow.
So you get married in front of the... Yeah, it's one of the... Besides me, it's the second best kept secret in Vegas.
Okay.
So it's just such a cool property.
Yeah.
And, come on, the branding, it's a Thunderbird. Even though it's not the Thunderbird, it looks really good on paper. So the idea is get people used to the logo, get people used to Martini's Magic, get them familiar with it so they get interest, it vested interest. That can take up to a year and a half. That's why shows close. They have all this money. They've got all these ticket people. They got all this stuff. They're still half full.
Yeah.
They're still not doing stuff. But now here's the problem. From that ticket, they're paying a promoter. They're paying the ticket person. They're paying a producer. They're paying a manager. They're paying all this money. And what's left, they end up paying out of their pocket. I just figured start small. Go in the other direction. Start small. The tickets were really inexpensive before. They went up. They're going up again in the fall. Okay, the show's going instead of every other week. It's going once a week. A couple months, it's going twice a week. By the end of the year, it'll be three times a week. It'll be comfortable.
So right now, you're only on Saturdays?
Well, that fluctuates now. Starting in September, it's every Thursday.
Okay.
And the reason I did that...
Thursdays and Saturdays or just Thursdays?
Just Thursdays. Because that allows that venue to be open for someone... An R&B guy wants to come in and rent the room for $5,000.
But do they change the chandeliers and everything else? Or is
no,
that
it
your
stays. Room? And trust me, it makes no sense for nobody else. But like sometimes they'll get a wedding reception and they want to pay $30,000 for a wedding reception, believe it or not. Or even 10 or even 5. So I thought, listen, I'm getting the room for free. I should make it available. Thursday is just a... Thursday's not a good night for locals in general. But you live in Vegas, you want to go to a show, it's whatever night of the week.
That's right.
It's a great night for tourists.
Yeah.
So I'm not losing anything by not taking a Saturday or demanding. I'm working with the hotel like they're working with me. Hey, can you guarantee me every Thursday? That's what the ticket broker needs. He needs guaranteed dates. Yep, you're going to have them. So easy.
Yeah.
But as it goes to 2 days, then that may be Wednesday, Thursday, or it might be Thursday, Friday, depending on what the hotel wants from me. But by the time it gets to 3 days, guaranteed it's going to be a Friday or a Saturday. Because now we're both making proper money, you know?
Living here in Vegas, and as long as you have there been some...
Oh, and by the way, it's not necessarily about making money, but the bottom line is, you know, people have to be paid. So it's about, you know, I've been rich, I'll be rich again, I've been rich, you know, it's not about that, it's being happy, living a life you want to do, but the people around you too have to have a little piece of the pie. That's all.
Sharing that, yeah.
So that's what means you got to make money.
Right.
Okay, so now to your question, sorry.
Having to do with celebrities in and around Las Vegas in particular, there are still some people like Rich Little and others who are from the older days, it seems, that are still performing. Have you had brushed shoulders with some of these guys, you know, like, I don't know, like Sammy Davis Jr. or somebody else, you know, that you've seen?
Well... Not so much in the entertainment business there. I don't like to go to the Strip. It's one big strip mall. That's why I like downtown.
Like Fremont Street?
Yeah, if you come in, this is on the way downtown. This is old Vegas. It's happening. It's fun. The slots are looser. The tables are looser. I know people that make money there and play the same strategy and don't make anything on the Strip. And you park your car for $10, a half hour to walk to the front of the casino where everything's going, and then that other casino looks like it's really close and it's a mile away and you try walking it. It's just, I don't get it. I digress from what you were asking me, sorry.
About celebrities.
Celebrities. I like hanging out with mobsters. So I'm a member of the Mob Museum. So I've met Frank Culotta, Hole in the Wall Gang, right, who was around when, if you've seen the movie Casino,
have, sure.
Okay. So his character is, he was the consultant. Okay. So it's loosely based on the stuff he told.
You know, along that line, it reminds me of Fielding West had told me years ago about the term 86. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, 86 means you know, you're going to get somebody out of here. Yeah. He said, yeah, what that means is they take you 8 miles out of town and bury 6 feet under.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Yeah.
That's a great thing. Now, the problem is, 8 miles out, you know, people don't believe this because my sister-in-law's on the force. They still find bodies. They just... Why scare the public that that might be a mob thing or this and that? It's just way too common. They have to, you know. But you know, 8 miles out isn't 8 miles out anymore. It should be a, you know.
You have to keep it in context of the day.
So, and I go to their lectures and this stuff over the mob museum. Interestingly enough, a guy called Bernie Sindler. Okay, I just met him. He started out as a card cheat and a magician. So he's back east somewhere, and I'm paraphrasing this, and I'm there, and I'm listening to his story, and he's doing card stuff, and he's just sitting on a train, and two well-dressed guys says, hey, kid, come on, show us some tricks. Show us some tricks. Where are you going? Ah, my dad's sending me to Florida. I got to get a fresh start or do something. Because he was leaning, kind of getting in trouble. He really wasn't, but, you know, if you're good with cards, you're in gambling houses when you're underage, right? So... Hey, we'll take care of you. Come and see. You got a place to stay? Come and stay with us. They pull up at this house. There's these gates. There's these initials. He doesn't know who he's talking to. And now they put him on the payroll. He's doing errands for him. He finds out later the two people on the train and the two people he's working for are Bugsy Siegel and Meyer Lansky.
Wow.
So he becomes an accountant, a bookie, a this and that for the mob, runs all these properties in Vegas.
And how old at the time? Teens?
Yeah, like probably 19 by then, you know, but by the time he's... Now, again, I'm paraphrasing, you know, because this has been a few months ago, and I've got the book, and I haven't read the book. And then I've invited him a couple of times.
He's still around.
Oh, he's still around. Yeah, I'm actually going to get him into this show. I was going to do some stuff with the Mob Museum, but, you know, they're so busy, they don't understand the magic. There's going to be magic in the mob, because I might have my own story. I can tell the Siegfried and Roy stories. I can get Bernie over there to tell his stories.
Siegfried and Roy story.
Well, of course. I mean, the mob hired him.
What?
Frank Rosenthal. Everybody knows the story about Bernie Human.
That was Irwin's.
No. So, Frank Rosenthal is running the Trop. He tells Bernie, hey, you know those German guys over there at MGM?
Hollywood.
I want those guys. On the way over, Bernie basically, and I'm paraphrasing, starts thinking, he goes over there and says, hey, how would you guys like to work over the Tropicana? Oh, no, we're happy. Yeah, but I can get you some more money. You know, think about it. Well, yeah, we'll think about it. Goes over to Frank Rosenthal. Hey, you know, these guys, they're a little difficult. They want a little more money. Look, I want them. I don't get just you're bothering me. Go. Goes over there on the way. Goes over there. Basically, this went back and forth. But basically said, listen, I can get you this. I can get you this. But I got to be your manager. They go, okay. So he's manipulating both of them. But Frank Rosenthal is the one that hired them over to the Trop.
Okay. So
Lefty Rosenthal, which... The dress and the cart that's in my show is Citra 1970s when Frank Rosenthal worked at the Stardust, which is kind of cool.
Oh, okay.
And I've always wanted to put that cart and that dress into the Illusion show, and I went, I'm doing a lot of stuff on that little
change
stage.
Change cart,
Yeah, as you know. I'm doing a lot of stuff that should be impossible, maximizing space, because there are no wings, there are no this, there are no that. So it's fun when I can do that. And mobsters are interesting. So this Bernie Schindler guy, he's great. So I went up to him and I produced my poker chip and gave it to him. He says, oh, kid, I got to show you this card trick. I do the greatest card trick in the world. I said, I'd like to see it. And he misunderstood because he's older. Well, I can't show you. No. I'd like to see it. I'll tell you what. You don't know who I am, and it doesn't matter. I'm going to call you one day. I'm going to take you out to the Golden Steer. You show me yours. I'll show you mine. Right? And, I mean, I've got this stuff. Sometimes there's tricks you just do for magicians. That just is the wow factor. There's no plot. It's just like, you know, it's like mic drop.
It's a fool.
So that's... I've had this thing forever, and I haven't known what to do with it. So if I get the chance with Bernie, it's going to be mic drop. I'm hoping.
Yeah.
I've never seen this guy's chops.
Yeah.
I mean, he was still nimble.
Yeah.
Still nimble for his
probably
age.
Jimmy Grippo and all those guys back then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He talked about Jimmy Grippo. So how cool is that? And there's got to be, look, Marvin worked for them. Anybody that worked in Vegas, late 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s,
into the 70s. Not that many magicians who worked back then. I mean, I thought magic really couldn't play in Vegas, they said.
But we were in one act, like what my bird act is. Marvin Roy, Channing, when he worked in Vegas. Jacques Caudel worked for the mob. Everybody worked for the mob. You know? Yeah. Liberace worked for the mob. Yeah. They all owned, and even when somebody else owned it, there was still a paper bag going out the back door.
Well, I've heard Fielding West say that things were better in some ways when they were by the mob, you know, and you kind of look at the, you know, 99 cent shrimp cocktails and $6 prime ribs.
Corporations don't skim. But well, corporations don't do if there's a gangbanger, and no offense, but if there's a bad element, I'm just using gangbanger, I'm not stereotyping. They just, they got to be politically correct. No, the mob goes, they take them out back, goes, get out of town. They don't get out of town, what are they? They're 86.
Yeah, they are sent out of town.
Yeah. So the only thing they did was, and the hardcore, the real mobsters did not want to deal drugs. You watch every movie, you talk to every story, stay away from heroin, stay away from that. It's only money. You know, money and girls.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, and I'm not condoning it, I'm not this, but yeah, it would be, because they had a set of rules that they lived by. Right? Good, bad, or indifferent, you know? It's funny, a police person told me the story about how the first gangs came to Vegas. And someone's going to correct me on this, I'm sure. Okay. But this guy in L.A. is going to get thrown in jail. He's too young or something. And again, I'm paraphrasing. This is 20 years ago. And because this person knew the judge and this, that, and was at the trial or was the officer that had to, this person had to check into. He said, well, I got family in North Las Vegas. So when he came, his friends came. And more friends came. And that's how the gangs got here. Now, invariably, they probably would have got here sooner or later. But they wouldn't have got here that soon.
Yeah.
You know? So everything has its... Everything is viral. It just has to start with one thing. You know? I'm hoping I become viral in Vegas at bringing... Maybe there's more class. You go to, like, Piero's, Piazzadora. That's a great place. You still got the Golden Steer. There are still some great places in this town.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, kind of like this where we are right now here in Frank's Tiki Lounge. And speaking of which, explain... To the listeners here, you just told me a while ago what a tiki lounge actually is, a real tiki lounge.
A tiki bar. Well, it's supposed to be when you walk into a real tiki bar, there's no windows. And that, unless, of course, you're by the water, because it's supposed to emphasize that you are swept away, you're in the tropics. You can be in the middle, there's some places in Michigan and there's 7 feet of snow, and you go inside, you take off your jacket, there's guys in tiki shirts and hats, it's nice and warm, and they can pretend for a moment they can escape. And the tiki culture started from people that came back from the war, came back from the South Seas, that wanted to keep that alive without getting into the whole thing that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's fantastic.
Right.
You know? And actually, the guy that...
It has to be really dark, too.
Yeah,
well, I say whenever I walk in...
This is one of the darker ones. And I don't like... I should warn people, you got to wear sunglasses when you come in because it's really dark. But I like people to experiment and go, holy shit, I can't see anything.
It wasn't until you whistled, I had no idea.
Yeah,
I didn't know if you
wave my phone like I'm at a concert, right?
Yeah, it was very dark when you walk in from the bright outdoors. Obviously, my eyes are adjusted here by now.
Yeah, see how bright it is now?
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
And there's that big tiki doll there in the front, or that totem pole or whatever. But the rest of this, yeah, it's very neat. And there's another one that's called the Golden... This is called Frank's, by the way.
Frankie's.
And there's one that's called...
What's funny about this place, this used to be a dive bar with two stripper poles. And you could smell the urine four blocks away. It was a real bad dive bar. But the guy who owns a double down here and in New York, he has a vision. It's the right place. It's the timing to put something like this, right? He says, if you build it, they'll come to it. He made a local bar, but tourists come from around the world to come to this bar.
But you were talking about another one called
The Golden Tiki, and it's a little more, it's closer to the strip, touristy. And honestly, I prefer this. I like dark bars. I can come in here, I can have the bar. Look, we have the bar to ourselves, we're smoking a cigar. It's a little brighter in there, it's a little more Disney, it's really cool, you gotta see it. I prefer the drinks here, I prefer the vibe. This is like, I'm Norm here, everybody knows me. And I told you, when Billy Gibbons walks in, I can go up to Billy, hey, what's going on, man?
From ZZ Top, by the way, Billy Gibbons.
This is his favorite bar in Vegas. You know, so, well, that's what he's told me. I don't know, you know. So, and it's funny, I got to show you later. I had a tiki carved like him.
Really?
That I have to pick up from my friend who carves all my tikis. And it looks like him. I'll show you a picture. Oh, hey. It's like, I always wonder, it's like you never see Gene Simmons and Billy Gibbons in the same room. And they have the same voice, don't they? I'm wondering, this, like, does Billy do a comb over to get that hair to be the demon? I don't know.
That's funny. Well, listen, I've enjoyed this. You've had a lot of really good stories and stuff. This has been a lot of fun.
And it's been disjointed, but anybody who knows me, if we start talking, it's like, you know, 7 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. You have to bring me back because, oh, I thought of this, I thought of this. And then when I get to, like, down here to the 20th thing, you got to bring me back. You know, it's just, I've been very lucky. I've met, look, I got to hang out with Charlie Miller. I got to hang out with Di Vernon. The greatest thing, you know, you've been around Di. People come up to him, hey, Di, how's it going?
Yeah.
Never say Di to an old man.
Yeah.
I used to love that. Their people's faces would drop. They would oh, I have just offended that little old man.
Yeah.
I mean, I never got to meet J.O.C. I mean, you know, Shimada was my father-in-law. Channing was like my second dad. Johnny Thompson was just, Johnny Thompson's the reason I do Birds. You know, it's just like another story for another day. I was doing Birds, but he's the one that did the little bit of push. Yeah, basically, well, if you want to do this, you got to go meet Channing, and you got to do this, you got to do this. Years later, he said, I never thought you'd do it, kid. I was discouraging you.
I didn't think you'd do it.
Yeah, I didn't think you'd know. But you got to have a little chutzpah, you know, if you really want it bad enough. That's all Channing would do. He would do stuff to discourage me. He would wait for the answer. He would. And then Channing, he was like my spiritual father, very, very metaphysical. There were times I wouldn't understand him for a year, then 6 months. Then one day, I corrected him something. He says, oh, grasshopper, the student has become the teacher.
That is funny.
It was great. So anyways, I digress again and pulled you off.
Yeah.
So you're going to pass your time limit on your podcast.
Nope. That's, well, I wanted to thank you very much, but because my podcast is called The Magic Word, I wanted to find out, what is your philosophy of life? What is it you live by? You know, what's your...
Well, there's a couple of things I live by. Well, of course, Martini's and Magic, it's not a show, it's a lifestyle. You know, it's... I always say this to people, too, and especially we're talking about the magic community, and it really should be more of a brotherhood, and just comics, actors, it's all the same. You know, there's no honor among thieves, only pirates. You know, and I coined that a little extra, because there is that saying, there's no honor among thieves, only pirates. Because pirates have the respect for each other to have parlay.
Yeah.
And we need that in magic. We need when someone goes, you know, you really shouldn't be on the strip doing the best of the best. And just ignoring it. Bone up to it. There's so much great stuff out there. There are I know, I personally have friends with some performers that are so great, but they're so great at doing other people's material and just taking it. And they take it and twist and they do it like, that's incredible. I go, it would have taken you an extra 20 minutes to go into Tarbell or go someplace else or do like I do, go get the barricade barrels and make it your own or do. Why do you got to take? And they can't wrap their head around that. I just find out who you are. Learn everything you can about magic. Goshman said, get on the bus, always have coins, thimbles with you, palm them, palm them, palm them, do everything. It doesn't matter if you're going to be a manipulator. You're going to need those chops one day. And you and I both know we can pick up any object and we can do magic with it if we have to. Corporate guy comes up and says, here's my logo on this steel trash can. Thank you, Pat Hazel. Do some magic with it, right? So it's like, live you. We all start, I was a copycat. You know, I did Henning. I did a faux Johnny Thompson act, not really, but I did a comedy bird act for a while, a little bit everybody else, and then one day I wanted to be me. Not even consciously. I wanted to, the style came, and don't be afraid. Don't do what everybody's doing on YouTube. Don't wear a white shirt and jeans and just think you're going to get away with that. And don't just look at your hands and not look at the audience. I see so many people that don't connect with the audience. Don't be afraid. Guess what? Guess what? If they like you, I can screw up as much as I want. What? I got halfway up in the levitation last night and I went halfway back down. That's never happened. Yeah. But I went back up. No one even brought it up. They forgot because they liked me. Didn't matter. Tricks are not important. Yeah. The magic's important and the magic is in you and the personality. I guess that's it. The magic is in you and the personality. Right?
Right. No, I agree with that.
You first, magic second. A classic example. Goldfinger and Dove can take the crappiest trick in the world and shine it up and make it into a diamond. That man amazes me what he can do with just something you just sit there and... So that's what I try and
do. Pedestrian, he can make that into a feature piece.
I got to tell... Real quick, can I tell you another quick story?
No. Well, of course you can.
he gave me this crappy little sponge ball trick and he went, this is you, James. Do something with this. But basically, it's a sponge ball to heart. What am I going to do with that? And he knows I do close-up. Okay, challenge on the floor, what am I going to do with this? It's my opener for my close-up show now for the public. I never go up and say, hey, I'm the magician. Hey, I want to show you a trick. Hey, can I do this? I say, excuse me, I've been told I have to magician for you. It's sort of an alcoholic test to see if you've drank too much so Savage doesn't get mad. Do you know what this is? And I put the ball right, and they get cross-eyed.
Right,
you know what this is? And they go, They go, clown nose, yes. Rudolph, no, I didn't kill him. Clown nose, yes. All these things. I said, but if you put this under a microscope, magnified a trillion billion times, it's a single blood cell. And you know, blood travels to the heart. The heart represents love. So what you're looking is, this is the genesis, the beginning of love. This little ball. I want you to open your hand. They put it in your hand. Close really hard. Now, think of something you love dearly, unless you're on a business trip and I look at the guy, right? And invariably, women say their kids are their dog, never their husband. So you love your dog. Let's see how much you love your dog. And they open it up and it's a heart. And they go, aw, I got them. I got them. From a crappy little sponge ball trick. God bless you, Albert Goshman and Goldfinger.
Yeah.
Because it's not about the trick. It's the presentation. It's you. It's the delivery. They already got my personality. I've already flirted with them. I've already kind of went a little blue. Mm-hmm. They already know what I'm
they
about.
Establish your personality in 60 seconds.
Right? I've never had anybody said, stop there, we're eating. But, I don't interrupt them when they're eating.
Right.
It's like or the guy who's... it's like they got the pudding spoon in their mouth. They're like, And I got to tell you, it's one of the hardest things to do is restaurant. Those guys, they're in the trenches.
Yep, I've done that for decades.
Second hardest is when you know you can only do 45 minutes of walk around. That's all you need to do, and they want you for 3 hours.
Right.
And Ricky Dunn also knows it's the art of using the bathroom, hanging out, and knowing. See, the guy wants you to do magic. These people haven't seen each other, or they haven't gossiped with that person and that person. They don't want to see you.
Yeah.
So, you know Ricky's story. We don't have to retell it. Really smart. But in essence is, hit the important people that they're going to talk about later. And then just politely, you can't carry that much magic. You don't want to show up that much, and you don't want to be that annoying. It's the art of doing it and not doing it. You know, 3 hours of walk around. Come on, really.
Right.
You're going to... Just make sure that's being in the trenches. Stuff I'm doing now, that's easy. I love doing it. Talking to the audience, doing what I want to do.
Falling off a log now.
And look, if I slip and say the F word, doesn't matter. It's 21 show. Hotel never says you can't do what you want to do. This is the first time in a long time I can do what I want to do. And you know what that does? I don't have to go near the F bomb. I don't want to. I don't try to do walk the blue line. But if it's there, I'll go there. It happens. It's the head. It's just, I'm a little broken that way. You know, my wife will look at me, and fortunately, unfortunately, she's in the wings. You know, okay. My hottie wife is there.
Is that Monique?
Yeah. You know, in the leopard outfit. And she'll have one say, it's like she'll go, but I got to. Sometimes you got to.
Yeah.
Paul Daniels didn't like me for years because he would do a line, and I hardly knew him at the time, and he wouldn't do the answer, and I would wait and wait. So finally I go, this guy's not going there, and I went there 3 or 4 times, and he would give me the dirtiest looks.
Yeah.
Like, do you know who I am, kid? I don't blame him.
Yeah.
But you're throwing away a joke. In my head, you never throw away a joke, and it's never too soon, even in the Me Too movement.
Right.
Guy gave me a line last night. You need to, when you're doing your thing, you go, yeah, I know, me too. And I go, no, but then I'm belittling them. But he had a good idea. So I go, yeah, I know, when I'm saying, hey, don't take me there. Okay, I led you there. All right, it's us two. And I wrote that line. That's going to go in. See, that's funny.
Yeah, that's
us
funny.
Two.
Yeah.
Now, I've included everybody, and no one is, I'm not saying that anybody's wrong or anybody's right. So I took what he said, and I went, okay, that's going to be funny, but how do I not offend anybody but still get the point across, you know?
Right.
And that's just by listening to people like you or people who are my friends or people who aren't afraid to go, I don't like that, or maybe, and it doesn't mean they're right. I've learned to listen to everybody.
You have to listen and appreciate it.
And then not even think they're wrong. Mull it over for a week, 2 weeks, a day, or this or that. And invariably, 9 times out of 10, yeah, they're wrong. But last night, and from you, I got 5 gems out of that show. So that made performing last night great. And that piece of music we're going to discuss after this that you're going to have to edit now because you're over time.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. This has been fantastic. Hope you guys have enjoyed this as much as I have. There's a ton of stuff to go back and listen to at least a second time on this. I think it's time for us to get another drink.
Cheers.
Cheers to you. It's Martinis and Magic, or Magic and Martinis, with James Mayer. And this is Scotty out.
Thank you, James. I enjoyed our chat and also the martinis and cigars as well. It's good to spend some time with you, and also I'm sure that the rest of the listeners really got a lot out of this then, too. If you did, you know, you might just leave a comment on the bottom of the blog at themagicwordpodcast.com. There's a space down there where you can add comments, and those are viewed by everybody also who comes to visit the website. And so if you'd like to leave a comment, please do, so that way they can see your name and kind of what you thought of the podcast as well. Well, speaking of names, I also want to thank someone who is a new friend of the Magic Word, and that is Sean Doolin. Thanks very much, Sean, for your recent donation to the Magic Word. It certainly helps us to continue to keep producing this podcast far into the future. So thank you, and all the rest of the friends of the Magic Word who have donated over the years and also made some pledges from month to month. Well, this next week we're going to be having somebody who is going to be completely different from what that we have had in the past. And I will say this, that it is not someone who is a magician. It may be someone that you may not even know, but it is interesting because he is an artist. Let me just kind of give it to you with that little bit of information. If you subscribe to the pod letter, then you will know who's going to be coming up, because I always put in there who's going to be coming up then the next week. So be sure to subscribe to our pod letter, and you can find out not only that, but also some suggestions from the archives of some other podcasts that you may have missed in the past that I think is worth going back and listening to for the first time, or perhaps for listening again. Much like I think this podcast has a lot of great information here that James DeMayer has shared with us, and it's worth going back and listening a time or two. And particularly if you're thinking about working with doves, you might want to check out his website and perhaps order his DVD then as well, which is very complete with everything that you will need to know. If you're going to be wanting to do dove work, then you may as well learn from the best. And he's one who is willing to share the secrets over there with you. So again, thanks very much, James. And thank you, listeners, for coming back here each week and to listening to our podcast. Well, this podcast has gone on a little bit longer than what our usual podcasts are. So let me just say, until next time, stay well, get booked, and remember that the real magic is in you. This is Scotty out.
In winter, it's a marshmallow world. Marshmallow.
Well, Frank, I want to tell you, it's real nice having you with us for the holiday.
I couldn't think of any better place to be.
Oh, hey, how about an eggnog? Huh?
Well, I'll take a little bit.